Welcome to today's New Life Live podcast. Today's podcast is brought to you by you. Your donations make this podcast possible. Please consider donating today using the New Life app, visit newlife.com, or call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Welcome to New Life Live with host and founder of New Life Ministries, Stephen Arterburn. New Life Live is dedicated to transforming lives one at a time, thanks to the giving hearts of you, our listeners. Our goal is to provide you with wisdom from God's Word to give you hope and help in life's hardest places. If you have a question you'd like to ask today, our phone lines are open. Call 1-800-229-3000. That number again is 1-800-229-3000. Now here's Steve.
Thank you, Terry Mack. Welcome to New Life Live. Terry always says hope and help. Well, God provides the hope, and Dr. Jill Hubbard and Dr. Alice Benton are here to provide the help, and welcome Dr. and Dr.
Hello.
Hello, Steve.
Glad you guys are here. You know, I think it's important to mention that a lot of people think they're holding on to hope, and in reality, it's just wishful thinking, or it's, trying to use God to not do anything.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm just waiting on the Lord. Well,
right.
You know, there's a place for that, and then there's not a place for that in other places.
And sometimes it's a cover for fear. I'm
yes.
afraid, like you were saying, to not do anything. I'm afraid, so I'll just hope in something off in the distance.
Yeah.
And yet the best predictor of future behavior is past behavior. And
mm-hmm.
so we really have to look at the evidence that of what we've experienced. We're probably going to get more unless there's a
yes.
big intervention, an outside
yeah.
force that might change it. God,
mm-hmm.
therapy, new life.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know what is the worst?
Good
you know what,
plug.
You know what the worst indicator of change behavior is? Future change in behavior? Worst indicator is motivation. Because you get caught doing something, boy, you are motivated then to make some changes, right?
Mm.
But then later, maybe not. And the biggest predictor, well, it really is past behavior. And the thing that has the most power to overcome that is humble willingness. When you say, okay, what do I need to do? I'm willing to do what's worked for a lot of people. Most people that you're aware of, that's when people get better. That's what change is all about. And you can do that by falling on your knees and having this emotional experience and a spiritual awakening. And you can also do that by making a decision to comply with what other people have done. You say, oh, look, I don't want to do this, but obviously I haven't managed to find anything better. So I'm just going to do it. Both of those.
So it's inviting other people into the process, right?
Yes,
because
indeed.
We kind of have to come to the end of ourselves and realize in and of ourselves, we can't do it.
And sometimes, yeah, go ahead, Alice, you go ahead and interrupt
me. If it's a loved one that we want to change, pain helps facilitate increasing humility. And if we
mm-hmm.
protect our loved one from the painful consequences of their behavior, we actually prolong them not changing and
mm-hmm.
not being humble enough
yeah.
to choose better.
And often what we're doing that increases their pain long term is alleviating our pain
mm-hmm.
short term.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing what makes us feel better. But I will say this. It's shocking how bad it has to get
yes.
before
mm-hmm.
a person says, maybe I ought to consider a different path. And I'm telling you, when you hit that place, you have hit a place. Jeremiah 6:16 says, stop at the crossroads and look around. Well, that's a great thing to do. Search for the old godly path. Walk in its steps, and you will find peace for your soul. What is that old godly path? It's the gift of His righteousness, the gift of His commandments, the gift of right over wrong, doing the best thing when it feels the worst. Those are the kind of things that are on that old godly path. If you want to join us on the program, as Peggy has from Long Beach, 1-800-229-3000. Glad to talk to you here today. Dr. Jill Hubbard, author of The Secrets Women Keep, Forgiving Our Fathers and Mothers. And Dr. Alice Benton, author of Soon to Be Released, Understanding and Loving Your Child in a Screen-Saturated World. We'll be back.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
We're back. Steve Arterburn here, and I want to clarify something. I told Alice, hey, yeah, go ahead and interrupt me. I tell people that are on radio with me to interrupt me. I don't particularly care for what I have to say.
It's hard for me to learn.
And so they're just doing what I ask them to do because I really think they're wise and smart and have things to say far beyond anything that I have to say. I've been saying it a long time. So if we can get something new in here, that'd be awfully nice. Jill has gotten letters. Don't interrupt. You know? Well, that's so nice. I appreciate the support. She's just doing what I ask her to do. 1-800-229-3000. Let's go talk to Peggy all the way from Long Beach, California. Here she is. Peggy, welcome to New Life Live. Dr. Jill Hubbard, Dr. Alice Benton, Steve Arterburn here. How could we help you today?
Hi, good morning. I just had a question about boundaries with my 20-year-old daughter.
Okay.
She's been smoking and seeing boys, and she lives at home with us. So I need to know what I can do to help her. She has past trauma. And she is willing to get help, but we leave it up to her to call. And there's always excuses. She's procrastinating, and so another thing is she is starving herself because she feels she's fat, and she's not. She's petite, and so we see her going down this wrong, you know, path, and we just don't know what to do. Tells us that she's not a child anymore. We can't tell her what to do.
Yeah. Well, I want to address one thing real off the bat. I want to address something first, and then I'll turn it over to Jill and Alice. I understand what you're saying when you say we think she should, you know, be the one to mm-hmm. call. That makes sense. But when that doesn't happen after couple of weeks or couple of months, then you have to say, okay, that didn't work. For some reason, she isn't able to do that. So that's when you call. You make the appointment. You tell her, you know, I've been thinking about this. I'm going to call and I'll make an appointment for both of us. You know, we both need help. We'll go see this person together. And here is when the appointment is and, you know, all that. And, so we'll just go together. And if she won't get in the car and go to that, now you've got a real big problem. But most of the time, they go. Like at Every Man's Battle, we do not tell women, be sure he calls. No. You call, you get the information, give it to him, and tell him to go. Then once there, it's our job to work with a guy that may not want to be there. And we know how to do that. But just waiting for her to call is not improving the situation. Jill, you want to take it from there?
Sure. Peggy, yeah. Is your daughter mm-hmm. fully self-supporting?
Well, she is.
Okay. So
why is she living at home?
She's saving her money.
Wait, she could live completely on her own apart from you if she wanted to.
She's looked into it, and she says she can't afford it.
Exactly. Okay. So here's the thing. I think people get hung up on numbers, especially immature adults chronologically, and they think that at 18, suddenly they get all of the rights of an adult. But when your kid is still in your home, and a lot of times at 18, they're still in high school, right? And is still receiving the benefits of your support, they are not fully adult. And adult moving into adulthood is not a number. It's a sense of taking on responsibility, more and more responsibility for oneself and making adult decisions. So it's something that you see developing and emerging in them. And so as that emerges, you hand things over to them. The one part about being an adult, though, however, is at this age, at 20, it is a privilege to live in your home. And that's it, you know, it's not a right that she has, it's a privilege. And so you get to have a say-so about some things. And she, so, but it shifts. It shifts. And instead of, you know, kind of laying down the law, you want to come alongside of her and start talking to her in a way that helps her to take responsibility. And that is looking at what is she doing in her life right now that is helping her life or taking away from her life and her moving forward into being fully an adult. And so some, and you have concerns, and it's okay to voice those concerns. And I agree with Steve. I think that she's not going to call because the things she's doing speak volumes about her immaturity and her struggle. And so I think as long as she's living in your home, you have a right to say, I think we need to get some help for you to help you make some of these decisions. And that, you know, mom and dad, you know, maybe you're tired of hearing from us, or I think she needs some other adult voices in her life to help her see and make those decisions for herself. So I think she immediately needs to get in to see someone. Because she's doing the restricting of the food. Smoking also can be a dietary thing that girls do to try to lose weight. So, you know, and then she's, and nothing wrong with seeing boys, but if she's getting involved with boys that maybe don't lead in the right direction, then that's not a good thing. So.
Yep. Okay.
So probably what we did is we prohibited her from seeing this guy. And I'm afraid that she would be doing things behind her back.
Right.
So what do I do in that?
How old is this guy?
We're same age. They're both 20.
And what don't you like about him?
Well, actually, he's a really nice kid, but she's not in the right state of mind. She goes through mood swings. She deals with depression. And we feel that she's just making decisions based on emotion.
So I'm wondering, you're putting the emphasis on the boy. I mean, if he's a nice kid, he might be someone that she talks to and shares her struggle with. I don't see that as your number one problem.
She did sleep over and at someone else's house. I'm not sure if she went to the boy's house.
Okay.
You know, so I guess I'm treating her like a child still. I don't want her to have sex.
I understand. Yeah. Go ahead.
It's a difference between saying you can't see this guy and saying, hey, he is always welcome in our home. Okay. But right now, we don't want you to see him outside of this because that's what the therapy is going to help you with so that we feel good about your state of mind. But I think you ought to be investing in this young man and being on his side, even though, because, you know, the best-looking kid in town can be just one of the most devious kids in private. Mm. So,
right.
Alice, what are your thoughts?
So I'm leaning towards that.
Well, Pam,
I'm leaning towards that, but my husband, I'm leaning towards including the boy. I want to talk to him, but my husband's not in the same page. He wants to just cut him off, and so we're just in limbo right now. We're just waiting to see what we're going to do, and that's why I called.
Consider this, because mandating that she have no communication with this boy, you're right, it probably isn't going to work, and she probably will communicate with him behind your back, and it's feeding her stance that you're treating me like a child and you have no right to tell me what to do. And I think by this age, especially if the relationship doesn't have fatal, very dangerous characteristics to it, I think we parents need to be cautious about what we mandate. It's better that we move towards strongly, lovingly stating our opinion and our desire, but backing off the mandates, because we really can't control that behavior anyhow. So I want you to have your husband listen to this call to consider that the strategy you all have been taking has not been working well and has been putting probably more distance between you and your daughter, which is not what either of you want. So rather, you might consider humbly acknowledging to her, in some areas we have been trying to control your behavior. And so we're prayerfully thinking about stepping off our statement we'd made about your boyfriend. Dad and I have to talk about it. We got to think about it. But we might be wrong in that area. That kind of confession will so likely lower her defenses and open up a little bit of relationship equity with her.
Well, imagine how she would feel if you said to her, you know, thinking about the way things have been going, I really questioned. And so I talked to some therapists, PhD psychologists. Your dad and I both have considered this, and they agreed it was a little too tough. And so we're going to change this. See, when you do that, you're using something like this program as an excuse to make the change. But what a thing that will say to her, that you were concerned enough, questioning enough, that you got some advice on that. That gives you so much credibility. And I just hope that you, your husband, could get on board with this guy, this young man. He needs to be coming over to the house. And he needs to be kind of...
Right. And I think a lot of times, I understand, Peggy, as a Christian parent of a daughter, you want her to stay pure. You're trying to get her to, you know, to preserve herself in that way. But I think more important than her following the rules of having sex or not is you've got to get to her heart. Because just following the rules isn't enough, and that does not cement her relationship with Jesus at all. And so, I mean, you're telling me she's depressed, and there's all this evidence. So getting at her heart and addressing what is she so depressed about that she's taking it out on her own body, right? And she's not taking good care of herself.
Peggy, I was just a little bit older than your daughter when I started to date my now husband, and my family fully disapproved of the relationship, and they cut me off in various ways, all with the purpose of motivating me to choose differently. Now, it doesn't always happen this way, but I entered into greater rebellion as they cut me off, and I so wish they had leaned in to get to know my husband when I was just dating him, and that would have softened my heart so much, and then I probably would have been able to hear, hey, you're not living by your beliefs that we know are true to you, because I wasn't, but I couldn't hear it when they didn't even know him, and they weren't even giving him a chance. This often works to take this route that we are, that we're suggesting to you. And I love to tell my children, I can't control you. It's not even my purpose or my intent, but it is my duty to set the standards for our household. And then I will control who gets the privileges that I can offer, who gets money, who gets rides, places. I will determine that, but you're in control of you and your behavior. I'm not.
Right. And I think it's good to sit down with your husband and say, okay, what are the things that she wants to do around here that are okay? You know, what's okay? And then on the other side of that page, what isn't? What? And I don't know, do you have a curfew for her? What's that look like?
We do. It's 9:30. When she goes out, and
for a 20-year-old,
that
made us sit up. Oh my gosh, Peggy! Wait, what did you say, Steve?
That's a little strict. Yeah,
a little.
Oh my gosh,
I didn't even have that. Beyond strict,
I didn't have that as a senior in high school.
No, I know. So Peggy, you know there are ways that you are treating your daughter more like she's an adolescent than a 20-year-old.
Okay.
Yes.
And you know what? At her age, the more you try to control, the more she's going to criticize you and cause a cavern between the two of you. And so you have to go from this need or desire to control her to give her the opportunity, make choices, She's still living at home. What a great thing for her to make choices that aren't healthy, and you're there.
How do I transition?
You use this. You use this program. Talking to us. You don't have to tell her you called a radio show. You could tell her you just talk to these professionals, these PhDs, and we're going to do it in a different way here.
And you let us link you up with a family therapist to have these conversations and to further strategize.
Yeah. It'll be great. You'll be so happy.
Yes.
You'll be so happy. And so will she. It'll get you what you really want. And what you really want is a confident and competent 20-year-old. We'll be back after this.
We'd love to hear from you. If you have a question or a comment, call toll-free 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
We're back. Steve Arterburn here, Dr. Alice Benton, Dr. Jill Hubbard. Hey, I want to ask you guys, didn't she say that the daughter had had trauma? Is that right?
She did. She did say that, and we didn't really
so,
dig into that.
That's why she certainly needs to be
absolutely.
In with a therapist.
Well,
here's what I want to ask you about. I want to talk to you. So when a person has been through trauma, you want to remember that this is a brain, a personality, a person that has been impacted in a way that most people have not. So here's the dilemma. Mm-hmm. A parent... Let's say a child is young, they've gone through trauma. A parent can say, well, you got to remember that trauma. And so they don't do certain things because they're considering the trauma. And then the past trauma becomes the ruler of all future things. And in the beginning, that should be the case. I mean, really, you need to get help. You need to get treatment. But at some point, and what is that point? You have to get beyond, don't forget that trauma. We can't ask this of this
person. I wish we had more time with Peggy, because that would be a good next thing to go into, because we really don't know what happened to her. But all the things that Peggy is seeing now are evidence of that.
Yeah.
And then, when you, as a parent, when you feel like you have failed in protecting your child, it makes sense that Peggy would be really anxious, and so would her husband, and so they're going to try to over-control as a way to protect. But what it does is just reinforce some of these behaviors, like the restricting of food. Okay, if she's being controlled in all these ways, that's the only thing she can control, right?
And a child's trauma does traumatize parents.
It does.
And results,
that's
like
true.
You're saying, in over-control.
Absolutely
or
true.
Too much leniency to kind of self-medicate our parental guilt.
Right.
And so we give in to our child too much, and we allow too much because they were hurt. And it becomes very confusing to know, how much do I enforce boundaries versus how much am I soft for my child who's in pain?
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It is a common reaction. The parent feels responsible for not protecting the child, and so we're going to protect now, and all these clamps come down. And that can be traumatic. But it's just a reaction to the original
trauma. And here's another thing. This is also why this daughter's not going to reach out and get help, right? She's still trying to survive. She's still doing survival behaviors. And so that's where the parent has to step in and not realize that there are pockets of real immaturity in this daughter that's probably arrested at the time of the trauma. And so that's where she's maybe not able to advocate for herself and needs them to step in there.
When we hear about such high parental fear of sexual behavior, premarital sexual behavior, it's so understandable, especially as Christians trying to uphold our values.
Yes.
But the tough question for us parents is, can we allow our children to fail? And can we allow them to choose sin without controlling them from even getting to that point? Because we don't have that control, truly. It's not reality to try to control whether or not our children make sinful choices. We can protect them, teach, model. There are so many things we can do. But we cross a line when we try to control them.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. But more, we want to speak into it and, you know, support our beliefs, right, by teaching them, you know, why, you know, God's best is for purity, right? But you start that early on in life.
My wife was reading a story to me about this parent who had, you know, just tried to do everything possible for the boy and nothing, you know, motivated the kid to change. So she gets a phone call from a police officer, ask if he's home. They have him on video shoplifting with two other boys. And so she says, yeah, he's here. Come arrest him. And so then she says to the son, hey, there's a police officer coming, and says you got in some kind of trouble. So, yeah, we'll welcome him. Police officer comes, says, you know, I don't know really what to do, but I think we better take you in. And handcuffs him, puts him in the car, and then in front of the boy, the police officer calls the mom to say, okay, well, we finished questioning him. You can come pick him up. And the mother says, I don't have time. And the police officer gets what she's doing. And so he says out loud, oh, you don't have time to pick him up. Okay, well, we don't have a place for him here. We're full. And so eventually it looks like she's going to have to come around 9 o'clock. To get him, mm-hmm. take him home. And it changed everything mm-hmm. versus, oh, my precious, I've got to get down there. Here, let me follow the police car. So, you know, that kind of thing. And those kind of bold moves sometimes are really the thing that can hopefully mm-hmm. bring around a child that hasn't come around.
I used to think my job as a parent was to make sure my children were always obedient. And I felt shame and like a sense of failure when my kids were and still are disobedient. But I realized that's not mine to control. My job is to bring to bear consequences like the mother in your story did. But it's not my job to control their behavior. I can't anyhow. And it's a waste of effort and energy to try
Anytime a child disobeys a parent, they are proving that they are normal, healthy children. Because if you've got a kid that complies with absolutely everything, probably going to be a nun or a priest. I don't know. I mean, how do you deal with that? It's pretty unusual.
I was really living a very anxiety-filled life. I turned on New Life, and the topic that day was about anxiety. And just by listening, I got relief.
You can help New Life stay on the air by joining Club New Life today. When you sign up to support us monthly through Club New Life, we'll send you the new member thank you gift of the Life Recovery Bible Personal Size, the one-year Life Recovery Prayer Devotional, the New Life Journal, a New Life Pen and Highlighter, and a New Life Zipper Tote to hold it all. Plus, there are ongoing benefits like access to the Club New Life video library, the monthly Club New Life CD or download, quarterly resources, free shipping on purchased resources, and discounts on workshops. Call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433. Support Club New Life, and together we can help hurting people find help and hope in life's hardest places. Call 1-800-639-5433 to join Club New Life today.
Glad you joined us for New Life Live. To be a part of the program, call 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
We are back. Jill, you had a comment there about compliant kids.
Oh, yes. Well, sometimes we think, gosh, you know, I'm doing such a great job as a parent. My child is so compliant. And if you have a child that is so overly compliant and people-pleasing, and what often happens is they kind of foreclose on their own identity and just kind of become what others need them to be. You want to have a little bit of pushback in your child because with those types of children, they end up having problems later on in life. And then parents are shocked by it because they were so compliant.
Yeah.
So
I was going to be a nun. I wrote to the Missionaries of Charity. I wanted to be a Mother Teresa nun. And
Alice.
I was one of those compliant on the surface kids, developing my people pleaser, avoiding deceptive. That was bubbling under the surface, soon to erupt. And the Missionaries of Charity never wrote back to me.
Oh,
so now I'm married with three kids.
What do you think it would be?
A better choice for you. Better use of your skill set.
Would it have been Dr. Sister Alice or Sister Dr. Alice? What do you think?
I think I would have gotten to your eminence eventually.
Well, you know what? I'll tell you. I have in the Christian world, I have seen so many dedicated and committed Christians, real believers in Christ. And I'll tell you, the commitment that the nun makes, I mean, it is just incredible.
Yeah, and we're not knocking nuns.
No, I'm honoring them. Everything we honor, we also usually, with
make
my
fun
humor,
of.
We don't make fun of. But I wasn't making fun. I'm just telling you, talk about the pro-life position. The Catholic Church has done so much more than anybody else. In fact, you know, I was just this past weekend, I spoke at Tony Evans Church, Oak Cliff Bible Fellowship in Dallas, at the first ever men's pro-life conference.
Oh, wow,
and
Steve.
It was CareNet put it on. Mm. Roland Warren is just such an amazing person leading that cause, and because you know, every abortion has at least one man involved,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
But many times it's not just one man; it's father, or a pastor, or a therapist, or someone who influences this person. And I don't remember the exact statistic, but it's almost like 90% of people that abort have no male support, mm-hmm. and the man really makes a difference. But anyway, when you go to these pro-life, like a CareNet conference, you meet some people a lot of times the Catholic nun, the priest, is just a different world than the evangelical Christians, and the hearts mm-hmm. that they have.
The dedication, the courage.
And, you know, a lot of people think of pro-life as a political movement. Well, there are people that are doing things politically, but it's not just politics. I mean, it's truly folks fighting for the lives of those babies who can't speak for themselves. And I was there at the Congressional Prayer Breakfast when Mother Teresa spoke, and the Clintons were sitting there, and she just looked at them and said, "You don't want your babies? You send your babies to me.
Aww.
I'll take care of them. Send your babies to me. Don't kill your babies." That's what she said about five times in a row.
Wow.
Don't kill your babies. It was so powerful. Second person I ever heard talk about alcoholism was the priest. His name, Father Martin. I don't know if you ever mm-hmm. saw any of his video, but it's so, so good. All right, let's go back to our calls. Let's talk to John from Moss Point, Mississippi. John, you are on with our two people. Or somebody will have to touch that button because I can't. You are on with Dr. Jill Hubbard and Dr. Alice Benton, and how are you today?
I am well, sir, and I pray that you, all y'all are doing well today.
Thank you. Thank you. What's on your heart?
Well, there was a first of all, I'd just like to say that I appreciate your show. It has done wonders for me and has helped greatly with the relationship between me and my daughter. Things had definitely gotten bad for a while, and after taking the advice from your show and listening to your callers, it had really done some good things for me in our relationship.
Thank you for saying that.
Thank you guys for what you do.
Thank you.
There was a conversation we were having online on your Facebook page, and I got into commenting on it and was talking about how pastors and the leadership of churches can be hurtful as well. Your social media team had asked me to call. I'm not sure what I can contribute, but...
Okay, so what's the issue that you guys were talking about? texting about?
Or we were talking posting? About the issue was we had our pastor, well, not my pastor anymore, I left, but in his position to force people to talk about, well, I say force, they were there were signing of certain contracts that the staff had to do, and they couldn't talk about anything that was going on in the church. We couldn't talk about any of the financials that go on in the church, because if you questioned the pastor or questioned the staff, and it was a heart problem on your part, and you needed to pray on yourself, you needed to trust your pastor, and it was anything that you questioned, even from biblical standpoints or anything else, he shut you down.
I wrote about that church in my book, Toxic Faith.
I was going to say.
It came out about 25 years ago, and there are many, many churches that operate that way. And if you are not able to bring about change by staying there, then you do have to leave that church, because staying there and not able to change it, you're kind of voting that it's okay for them to stay the same. Why did you leave?
Absolutely. Well, I had been praying for over 2 years to be able to leave, and God told me that I needed to stay for whatever purpose it might have been at the time.
Right.
And then one day it was, okay, it's time to leave. Mm-hmm. And what had happened the weekend before was an issue. I was on one of the serve teams, one of the safety teams at the church, and I was approached with a matter that, and I wanted to check the cameras, and I told them, I said, well, if we can't find anything or see anything, there's nothing we can legally do, but we'll try to check into it. And, it all got turned around where I was trying to do a full investigation for over a year on a person at that church by myself, which was false. Names were called. I was told that I was delusional, and the person that came to me was told that they were attention hoarders and all this other. And it was a big mess, and I don't really want to get into it a whole lot, but what I ended up having, I left because God finally told me that I could leave, and then the next day, everything blew up.
Hmm.
It was just a big mess.
I
told the pastor what I thought about what he was doing. I said, I'm sorry?
I said, eventually it does blow up.
Yeah,
it does. So you told the pastor what you thought about what he was doing, and then what happened?
He ended up telling me that I was delusional, that I had that I had issues, and that I was no longer welcome on the property. And I wasn't rude with him. I didn't use cuss words or anything else. I wasn't personally attacking him.
So
what you've done is wrong.
Yeah. What were you wanting to us to talk about with you? Is there something you wanted us to help you with, or what?
Well, I mean, I don't know what anybody can do to really help with the issue. I was asked by the media team to call.
Yeah, John, I think you're highlighting a problem of when pastors or church staff become untouchable.
Yeah.
And that's problematic in any church. And that has to do with the pastor often hiding behind his role, right, and being caught in that shame and pride cycle. Right, that somehow he's supposed to know it all and not, you know, have people at his same level. And so that creates a really unhealthy dynamic in a church.
And you suffered for doing what was right and for trying to call attention to the problem. I think about how the Bible in James 3:1, it says teachers are held to a higher level of accountability and will be subject to greater judgment and condemnation because these leaders, pastors, us as teachers here on the radio, we have a voice and we have a microphone, and we have to be so cautious with it because we'll be held accountable for what we do. I'm sorry That's you right. went through that, John.
Yeah. John, it's amazing how difficult it is for most people to see what you saw and see. And I'm grateful that you did. I mean, there's some discernment there. But, man, it's hard for people to think that this pastor might have a problem. Just to say thanks for calling us, let me send you a copy of Every Man's Bible, best-selling study Bible in 19 and whatever.
find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
We're back. Years ago, Jack Felton and I wrote the book Toxic Faith. It was on the cover of Publishers Weekly. It said, instantly a classic. And over the years, it's just been such a great privilege to have people say, I was in a church. I read that book. And I am free. Because it talks about the different roles that people take on in a unhealthy church. Now, do I think most churches are unhealthy? Absolutely not. But it's really good when one is not. And, you know, it's kind of a theme of mine talking about this. And so I'm sure the social media folks said to him, oh, I know Steve would love to hear that you walked away from a toxic church, because that takes a tremendous amount of courage. It's the most honored role that you can take, the role of outcast, because once you leave, people, they say really crummy things about you to discount whatever it is that you think is so horrible. All right, well, let's go back to the calls. Got time for one more call here. And how about we talk with Danielle, Wichita, Kansas, who's standing in a windstorm. Hi, Danielle.
Hello.
Are you...
Yes, can you hear me?
Well, the windows are down or something. It's very loud. But
if you ask us a question...
Is that
better?
Much better.
Yep.
Thank you.
Good job.
Yeah. Okay. We don't have a lot of time, but I did want to get to your call.
So my question is, I come from, my husband and I separated 9 months ago, and I left because he was very authoritative over my teenage daughter. We both have children from prior relationships, but we have a 15-month-old son together, and we haven't been living under the same roof. We've been separated, and I keep hoping and praying and working on myself in areas that I know I was unhealthy in, but I sometimes question, like, am I being a fool for hoping and praying that my family will be back together again?
And what is your
infidelity on my side or his side that I know of?
What's the question for us then, so we can specifically answer what you want to know?
Like, what I should do, I guess, in the meantime, like, instead of just getting sad about it or just taking it to God, if that makes sense, because my daughter was very hurt by his approach, and I mean, it's been 9 months, and yet I still feel like, even though my daughter is a handful at times, I want to do what's best for my children and I.
Yeah, okay. So how long did you guys date before you put these families together?
Oh, my goodness. 6 months?
Oh, my goodness.
We were married within 6 months.
Yeah, well, there you go. So I'm going to use your situation to just say some things that really matter to me. And one is, based on statistics, blending families is usually not a good idea, because only 30% of blended families stay together. Misty and I just celebrated 17 years of beating the odds in our blended family. And at my daughter's wedding, I think she was definitely the highlight. But I think the brothers and sister that love her so much, I think they also really stood out, as you've got five kids. And Misty and I had two. She brought two in. I brought Madeline. And it worked. But it's rare. You must not ever blend families without getting counseling beforehand. And if you are in that counseling and you don't have a man, like your woman, you don't have a man who is saying, I am going to earn the respect of these kids versus they will respect me from the beginning, you are definitely making a mistake. And I would be apologizing to my daughter for not fully understanding the style that he had. I wouldn't just be sitting there doing nothing. I'd be in counseling with my daughter. And the second thing I would do is I would say to him, either let's get help together and figure this out so we can be a family together, or I'm just considering that you're saying we're divorced. We're not, because there's no hope with us just sitting here doing nothing. We have to make this a separation with a purpose, and we have to have a plan. And so we need to get in together. If you could go to our marriage workshop, our intensive, the two of you, it would change everything. I really do believe that. Alice, Jill, you have a comment here before we have to go.
Danielle, I'm going to take a risk. A couple of the things you said made me question your sensitivity to your husband's approach. Now, if he's abusive, you absolutely made the right choice in stepping away from him. If he's heavy-handed, then that also might be worthy of considering stepping away. If he's a good disciplinarian and you're not used to that for yourself, for your daughter, and she might need a good disciplinarian, then I would consider if your husband is remorseful and willing to get help and willing to temper his disciplinarian approach with your daughter, then there could be great hope for your family. So it's partly why you need that outside opinion that Steve is talking about, because you need help evaluating, was his behavior dangerous? Was it damaging? Or is it something you and your daughter aren't used to and he was too quick going about it?
Well, let me just say this, Alice. I believe that when families are blended, that the birth parent needs to be the primary disciplinarian of their birth children until the blend has occurred. And that could be never, or it could be 2, 3, 4 years down
the way. Well, yeah, blending takes a long time.
Yeah.
It takes years. I think it takes about 8 years.
And he definitely jumped the gun on disciplining her too quickly.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so I let Misty be the primary disciplinarian of her boys and me with Madeline. And we found that to really work. And any time that we stepped over the line, we found evidence that, yeah, we need to go right back to that. And then eventually it didn't matter who was disciplining whom, because we were truly a family. Now, before we go, by the way, I'm going to send her the book that's coming out, Understanding and Loving Your Children in Blended Families. That's coming. But I want you to know that this Saturday is our Lose It for Life intensive, which is an extensive. It's 5 weeks of changing patterns, coaching sessions, weekly training sessions, every day getting encouragement, and some individual sessions. So please, if you want to change the way you feel on the inside that is impacting how much you weigh on the outside, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Every man's battle is April the 8th in Columbus, Ohio. And emotional freedom is April 30. And our brand new intensive, it's online, Transforming Grief, May the 7th. Now, when I was at Tony Evans Church, someone said, hey, there's a person out there that wants to know if they could talk to you. I said, sure, bring him back. And this guy said, in 2009, my wife and I, there had been infidelity on both our parts. We went to the marriage intensive in 2009. Here's what he said. Today, we are kicking it. I mean, he said, we have such a great relationship. And that weekend turned it around. Now, that's what I love to hear. Just makes my heart sing. And so many of those other men said that it was every man's battle that had changed their heart. Don't be like you are if people don't like you the way you are. Get some help. Humble down and get the help that you need. And we can do that, 1-800-NEW-LIFE. And if you can help us reach more and more people to end up in a redemptive relationship based on God's truth, then call us at 1-800-NEW-LIFE. We'll send you a copy of Dr. Daniel Amen's Conquer Worry and Anxiety as a way of saying thanks. Thank you, Dr. Jill Hubbard. Thank you, Dr. Alice Benton. And to all of you who listen, watch, and pray, thank you so much.
Thanks for listening. We hope this program has helped you by giving you insights for handling the challenges you face in your life. We want you to know that we're here for you, but you also need to know that New Life Live is a listener-supported ministry. To make your donation or to get any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433, or write to us at New Life Ministries, P.O. Box 1029, Lake Forest, California, 92609. Please join us again tomorrow for New Life Live.
Today's podcast can be downloaded through iTunes or streamed through your mobile device using the New Life app. Visit newlife.com to download the app today.